gut issues, hormone issues, thyroid issues, more questions on red light therapy. We're going to talk about all that today and more, so stay tuned. Welcome back to the Evolving Wellness Podcast. My name is Sarah, and today I am going to answer questions that were submitted over on YouTube. Now, the last Ask Me Anything episode did really well, had a lot of great feedback, so I thought I would do another one. There are lots of questions that were submitted. I may not get to all of them in this episode. I will likely have to do a part two, but I will do my best to get through all of them. Now, before I jump into the episode, I just want to mention that this is not a substitute for medical advice or working one-on-one with someone. It can be really difficult when someone asks you a question and you don't know where they live, because I'm going to answer some questions completely differently for someone based on where they live. If it's someone on the equator versus somebody up in like Norway or Sweden, the answer could be completely different. I also don't know what your current diet is, your health history, all of those things. And so I will do my best to answer all of these, but it's not a substitute for medical advice or working one-on-one with someone who can really ask you these things and have a full conversation and dialogue with you. Now, if you do want a little bit more access to me and to kind of interact with me, I do have a private membership group. You get a free month of that with my 21-day leptin reset program, as well as my quantum nutrition program. You can get a coupon for those. The coupon code is podcast. Anytime, you can redeem that to get a discount for being a listener and watching the show. I also have tons of free resources if you're just new here and getting started at www.sarahkleinerwellness.com. Go to the free resources tab, and my courses are under the courses tab. I will put all those links down in the show notes, but just for anybody who is like, I submitted a question, I didn't get my answer, I will do my best to get to all of them. But if you really want to have more interaction with me, that the courses and group is a great way to do that. And my free resources, I have an FAQ guide as well that answers a ton of questions that I get on a regular basis. Today's show is brought to you by Upgraded Formulas. They have my absolute favorite magnesium. You can get the best and only clinically studied stabilized nano magnesium supplement on the market from Upgraded Formulas using my code YOGI for 10% off. Did you know that magnesium is actually required for over 800 enzymatic reactions in the body? This clinically studied magnesium has proven to improve sleep quality and energy by over 60%, specifically improving light sleep measurement by 90%, REM sleep by 150%, and deep sleep by 250%. More energy, better mood, and deeper sleep. Who doesn't want that? What makes this the best on the market? This specific magnesium is nano magnesium, which means it is easier for your body to absorb and use. In fact, it is absorbed up to 99.99%, which means you'll feel the results instantaneously and you'll see them too. Now that we got that out of the way, let me jump to the very first question, which is about Hashimoto's. And this person wants to know whether they should buy a holy hydrogen machine or deuterium depleted water when dealing with Hashimoto's. And honestly, I would say neither. I would say neither to be the first line of defense. First of all, I love the holy hydrogen machine. My code there is Sarah K. We've been using it, but we had a lot of issues going on with my daughter that preceded us buying that machine. It is a big investment, and I don't want to just willy-nilly tell everyone to just go buy it when there are other levers that they can be pulling first. Same thing with deuterium depleted water. Now, with deuterium depleted water, if your circadian rhythms are crap, if your light environment is crap, if your exclusion zone water inside of your body isn't worked on first, the water is only going to do so much for you. And I'm really, a lot of times, only going to have people do the water if they have some sort of a serious medical diagnosis that they are working with and they have a doctor kind of helping them through the process as well. So if someone comes to me and says, I have Hashimoto's, I'm going to say, let's work on more things like, of course, circadian rhythms. Morning sunlight is very, very important thing for the immune system, believe it or not, because of the activation of POMC and the leptin melanocortin pathway. The immune system and leptin have a huge relationship. I really dove into this very deeply in my leptin practitioner course, which is running right now. You can find that in my courses page if you're someone who wants a deeper look into this. But just for someone listening, All you need to know is that leptin and the immune system have a huge relationship, and a lot of those pathways that are beneficial to be activated, they do happen in that morning sunlight in the UVA. So you want sunrise, then you want UVA. That can be really impactful. Blocking the blue light at night is very, very important because, again, the body needs this time and adequate melatonin to repair and to support the immune system. So I would look at those things first. I would look at your nutrition. I would cut out all of the grains. I would cut out dairy. I would cut out those things because those can activate the immune system. They can also block the leptin receptor, which is, we need that to really be functioning optimally to assist in autoimmune conditions, anything going on with the body where there's inflammation. We really want those pathways to be open. So I would eliminate those. I would look at a low deuterium diet before I bought the water. Again, I don't want someone to go invest a bunch of money and spend money on something that is not going to ultimately give them the best results. Now, yes, a hydrogen inhalation can actually help the body to deplete deuterium. The only machine I've ever tested and used is the Holy Hydrogen. My code there again is Sarah K. And I've also done deuterium depleted water, but this was after I had done all the other things, right? And was having great results. And I just wanted that little bit of a mitochondrial boost to help my body. So go for the low hanging fruit first. And if you need more help, if you need more support, I would definitely check out the 21 day leptin reset. I've got plenty of women in my group. And I've got some testimonials of women who have brought their antibodies down close to zero doing the things in the leptin reset, come off of thyroid medications, again, working with their practitioner in conjunction with the work. And we have a lot of Hashimoto's ladies that have reversed it that are in my private community as well. So know that it is possible. I would not go to the deuterium depleted water and the hydrogen machine as your first line of defense. I would do these other things, which are pretty much low cost and or free. And if you're still struggling after doing that, then maybe look at one of the two. And I'm a huge fan of the hydrogen inhalation over the deuterium depleted water because there are so many other benefits. It's a selective antioxidant. It can cross the blood-brain barrier, brings down inflammation. I'm still using it. I absolutely love it. And I'm continuing to see good results for my daughter who we have really tried all kinds of things for. And this is the first thing that I really, really see measurable good results. But again, try the free stuff first before making such a big investment. Okay, this is a long question, so I'm going to look down as I read it. It says, you said in an earlier video that your protein recommendations are less than Dr. Cruz's. What is your general protein guideline in grams that you would recommend women who heal leptin resistance start around? So I will answer that first. Typically, what I see with women who are trying to heal leptin resistance that are not ridiculously active, that don't have a ton of muscle. Again, this is one of those like context answers. Like if someone has a ton of muscle, they're very, very active. They typically don't have leptin resistance to begin with. But the protein amount that I personally see be very successful, it's one I've stuck to for many years, have a lot of clients doing, and it is just a great baseline, is take your body weight in kilograms and multiply that by 1.5 and divide that up over three meals. So that is typically where I start people with the protein. I know Cruz goes way higher than that. And again, for men, that can be fabulous. For women, it can be a little bit much. And that's just my clinical experience. And let me get to the second part of this question. If sticking to a lower carb diet while lowering your leptin, would you eat higher fat during this time as well? Yes. So protein and fat are levers. And if someone comes to wanting to heal leptin resistance, I don't have them go straight to keto or straight to low carb. I do what I talked about in that very first question, get rid of the grains, get rid of the rice, get rid of the cereal, get rid of these, foods that are kind of probably keeping your body in this more inflamed state and blocking the leptin receptor. Let's get rid of those first and then see, is the scale moving down? Are you having success? Are things working for you? And if, I don't put people straight into keto when they're first starting out, because I really want to spend the time working on the light environment. I want to spend the time working on more outdoor time, building exclusion zone water inside of the body, rather than putting them straight into diet. Now we use the carbs as a lever, but that's something that's done gradually in my programs. It's like go slowly because it will cause a lot of the minerals in the body to shift. And most people going into this type of a diet already have mineral imbalances, especially low potassium. So I will see people come to me and say, oh, I cut my carbs out. I lowered my carbs down to 50 grams or less. And now I can't sleep. I feel terrible. My hair's falling out. I'm like, well, what were you eating before? And then how, you know, did you go too fast, right? Were we trying to rip the Band-Aid off and go all the way down to nothing? And so the carbs and fat are a lever. So if your carbs are a little bit higher, let's say you're eating like 150 grams of carbs, then you would absolutely not do a high fat diet, you know? And as the carbs go down, the fat goes up. So it's a lever, right? I don't think anyone ever really needs to go to eating like ridiculously high fat to get into ketosis and to get their body adept at tapping into their own body fat stores. I've made that mistake myself in the past and with a lot of clients. And so what we really need to do is train the body to be more efficient and metabolically flexible and learn how to tap into its own body fat store. So protein is that constant. And then we use the carbs and the fat as a lever, depending on what your diet was like previously. And if you're seeing progress, right? If somebody has gone from this really, you know, crappy standard American diet, they come to the leptin reset, they cut out the grains, they cut out the cakes and breads and all that stuff, and they're seeing progress and the scale's moving down. I'm not going to say, okay, well, let's cut more carbs out. Let's cut more carbs out. If they're seeing progress, it's when they start having the stalls and they're doing all the other things that I'm like, all right, let's bring it down. Let's bring it down. So I know that's a big shift in how I do things nutritionally, but after really working with thousands of people at this point, this is what I see as most, effective and doable. Right? Like, sure, it's going to be helpful to cut it all down, but how doable is that? And how much are people going to be overeating and it's unachievable, unattainable, right? So you have to build the discipline in order to get there. I'm very disciplined now. I don't find myself binging, snacking, going overboard on things, but I've been at this for quite a long time now. And I don't expect everyone to kind of like adhere to what I do. So I really like to meet people where they are. I'm probably confusing myself. Yes. And a lot of people do that. But if protein is moderate and carbs are low, fat seems to be the only other way to get calories in. Am I correct in assuming this? So if you are essentially eating keto while leptin resistant and it causes inflammation due to a dysfunctional AMPK pathway, then how should we eat for healing? Again, I'm probably just confusing myself, but thank you so much. So here's the thing when someone is very leptin resistant and they're trying to do immediately, like I said, I'm not going to take you from high carb to keto immediately. I'm not going to take you to fasting immediately. I'm not going to do high intensity interval training immediately, right? Because we have to work on healing leptin resistance and getting this AMPK pathway back to working properly again. So don't overthink it, right? Like I said, work on establishing safety for the body. The light signals are key and foundational. We work on those protein amounts, the protein signaling, and we bring the carbs down gently as a lever. Unless there's like a medical reason someone has some big issue and they really need to be in a ketogenic diet, I'm not going to push someone into it right away. So you're going to go slowly all the while. This is going to take time. And when you're doing all these other things, again, everyone forgets when they talk about leptin resistance, the leptin melanocortin pathway and the importance of POMC and how all of these things need to be happening daily, blocking blue light at night. They want to just jump right into the food. We're fixing all these things in conjunction and we can slowly bring someone to a point where they can do keto, where they can do fasting. I can fast now easily and it doesn't ruin everything and I get great benefits from it. A couple of years ago when I was really struggling with leptin resistance, I would fast and I would actually have negative results from it. So this is a thing. Start where you are, go slowly, keep it simple, and don't stress. When you are working on leptin resistance, you're going to heal that broken AMPK pathway, and then you're going to be able to do these things eventually and get the positive benefits and the results that everyone talks about from fasting, from keto, from HIIT, all this stuff. But right now, if you are leptin resistant, you're going to do these things, it's going to backfire for most people. All right. I have a lot of fertility questions in this thread today. So I'll try to answer some of the questions all within this question, but someone wants to know if I was wanting to get pregnant again, which that's not on the agenda, just to let you all know, what would I be doing? And let's see if there was a second part to this. And what would be the first things that you would do if you're trying to optimize fertility? And someone also wanted to know about my fertility journey. So if you're new here and didn't know, I got into quantum and circadian biology through a pretty bad experience with multiple miscarriages, 2 failed rounds of IVF, and going kind of the functional medicine route. We cashed out a bunch of money from our retirement to pay for all of this stuff. So it was very costly, very emotional. And I found circadian biology, quantum biology via Dr. Jack Cruz, and learning about leptin and all these things. So I wouldn't honestly change a whole lot of things that I don't already do if I was wanting to get pregnant. I might up some of my nutrients. I might up my quinton, hypertonic minerals. It's Quinton. I always recommend women look at their pregnancy protocol. I think it's on the Water and Wellness website. So I think doing the remineralizing using that Water and Wellness pregnancy protocol is huge. Really, I would probably work on building up my vitamin D stores, which I'm already doing that anyway, because I see a huge health benefit to that. But I really wouldn't change a whole lot of what I'm already doing and what I talk about for pretty much everyone. That's the thing. Like, a lot of people want specialized protocols, and you know, a lot of the information is going to be similar. Build exclusion zone water through things like infrared light exposure on the skin. You get that in the sun. The sun is 40 to 42% infrared light. Near infrared, far, is another part of that. So it's about 50% of the sun is infrared. I would work on that, building exclusion zone water, grounding, blocking non-native EMF, mitigating that, keeping my circadian rhythms dialed in, blocking blue light at night. And yeah, I wouldn't honestly change a whole lot. Someone wants to know about ASEA or ASEA redox water. Is it a good solution? Does it actually help to build redox? And to be honest with you, it's not something I've tried. I've talked with my colleague, Carrie Bennett, about this several times because she gets asked about it a lot as well. Her and I are both pretty wary of MLMs at this point. A lot of people reach out to both of us daily because we have larger audiences, and you know, I've been burned in the past with MLMs before, and I don't want to get involved. But Carrie has specifically asked them to provide independent research to back up their claims, and she has gotten nothing. I have had clients who love the products and think they're great. I've also talked to other practitioners who said that they see about a 50-50 success rate with the ASEA or ASEA. I'm not sure if I'm saying it incorrect. I apologize to those of you who use the products. No disrespect, but I have talked to practitioners that they see about a 50-50 success rate. I've seen, actually, I think it was, well, I'm not going to mention her name. A good friend of mine who's a practitioner had a family that invested in the water, and it actually, cause pigmentation issues in the skin. It drew the melanin out of the skin. So I thought that was very interesting and strange. But I, again, have no personal experience with it. I'm really wary of MLMs, having been burned by them personally in the past. And I would just rather, you know, not get involved in those types of things. So do your own research. You can always try it out for yourself. I don't, you know, and that's what I think about them. Okay, this question says, Dear Sarah, I suspect I have gluten problems, histamine problems, and leptin problems. Where do I start first? If I do an elimination diet, which of them should I do first? You know, I would work on a leptin reset program. And in a leptin reset, the way that I teach a leptin reset, you're going to eliminate a lot of these trigger foods that can cause these issues with inflammation. Histamine issues, a lot of it can be traced back to lack of EZ water in the body, lack of cellular hydration. And so that's, again, one thing I would really look at is building the EZ in your body through infrared, through grounding, through UV exposure, through adequate hydration, drinking the right water. I think there's a question on that. And I do have a water video on my YouTube channel and an entire water playlist if you want to dive into this topic of hydration and water. And in my leptin master plan practitioner course, I have a whole week that we spend talking about water and easy water, all the things. So those are the places I would start. I wouldn't necessarily just do one or the other. I would look at everything, your light environment, your cellular hydration, getting rid of any inflammatory foods, and just going from there. Let's talk about protein, because it is so important that our bodies get enough protein. But a problem I see as a clinician is that people will increase their protein and they will begin to have digestive issues. This is because your body can only absorb protein that's been broken down into smaller building blocks called amino acids. If you cannot break down and digest this protein due to a sufficient supply of enzymes, your muscles and your body will be starving for those vital building blocks. This is why it can be very helpful to take a high quality enzyme. The one that I have been using and trusting myself is called MassZymes by Bioptimizers. MassZymes is a full spectrum enzyme formula with more protease than other commercially available enzymes, with 5 different kinds. Plus, it contains all the other key enzymes you need for optimal digestions. You can try it today risk-free. Their 365-day full money-back guarantee is the gold standard in the industry. You can use my link in the show notes and my coupon code SKW to get 10% off your order. Check out MassZymes by Optimizers. This one says, "Hi, Sarah. I have an old infrared heat lamp from the 1960s incandescent bulb. Is this just as effective as modern red light devices? I can't find much info on them. And is it necessary to cover your eyes?" So infrared is going to be great. That is really the issue with a lot of our modern light bulbs, is that all the infrared is out, and it's infrared from the sun, like I've been talking about a lot in this episode already, that helps the body build this exclusion zone water, right? Which is absolutely crucial, because every single one of our cells is supposed to be negatively charged, have adequate exclusion zone water. The mitochondria also needs to have exclusion zone water appropriately, because it surrounds each of those 5 respiratory proteins. Mitochondria makes exclusion zone water as well, at cytochrome 4, cytochrome C oxidase. And so, infrared can be very helpful at building that. Now, the difference between like an infrared bulb or even a heat lamp is that it's not going to be a therapeutic wavelength like a lot of these red light therapy panels, which are typically like 630 nanometers and 830 nanometers. So they have red and near infrared, and they have those more therapeutic wavelengths. So different wavelengths, but there's still a lot of great benefits in incandescent or the infrared heat lamps. I think they're great, but not going to give you the same exact benefits as a red light therapy panel. Do you classify seeds, especially flax seeds, as having the same negative effect as nuts? They can, because they can actually be very estrogenic, and they can cause the body to mimic estrogen, like make estrogen in the body. So I typically stay away from those. People, the body can also see those as a foreign invader and kind of attack. They are similar to certain glands in the body. When the body sees a substance in the body, like this is the biggest issue with gluten and the thyroid, is that the body senses the gluten and it looks similar to the thyroid. And so it ends up attacking the thyroid gland when someone has a gluten sensitivity and they're eating a lot of it. So flax seeds can behave similarly. What are your suggestions for unexpected blood sugar emergency food ideas, especially if there's no local food available and one cannot eat anything but fresh, if one has histamine intolerance, especially on road trips? I mean, that's a really tough one. And that's where I would really work on becoming more fat adapted, so that you can do more fasting. You know, I know that's not a quick fix or quick solution, but one of the benefits of healing leptin resistance is that you become more metabolically flexible, so you can tap into your own body fat stores. So I flew all the way from Atlanta, Georgia to Bali and fasted the whole way there, 24 hours of flying, because eating on an airplane is not going to be ideal when you're in that sort of a stressful environment. So I would work on really becoming more fat adapted, so that when you do get to a road trip, you can fast, especially if there's issues where you're histamine intolerant, because there's not really a lot of foods like beef jerky that wouldn't necessarily aggravate histamine issues. And then why are macadamia nuts suggested as a low deuterium food, but not for leptin? So the reason why I just tell people they should probably leave the macadamia nuts alone, even though there's like, those are the most safest ones, I think, for people, is that they will overeat them typically. And typically, if someone's coming to my programs, they have elevated leptin, they're trying to bring that down. And so when you're overeating, you're driving leptin up if you're eating more than your energy requirement. And macadamia nuts are really, really easy to overeat. So they're, I think, the safest nuts. They have the least amount of anti-nutrients, and they're very low in deuterium. So yeah, that's great. But I don't know a lot of people that are great at just having like one serving of them. And if you are on a journey where you're trying to bring things down, bring inflammation down, then I think they're better food choices. You don't necessarily need to be eating them. I don't want people snacking on a leptin reset either. The goal is to get to 3 meals a day and then get to a place where, again, you're fat adapted. If you want to occasionally skip dinner, you're fine. You're not going to start off there, but that's the goal, is to get there. So I don't really encourage snacking. I actually rather discourage snacking, especially if someone is trying to bring inflammation down. It's not going to be helpful, and it's not going to be helpful in reversing leptin resistance. So someone said fertility, your fertility journey would be amazing. So yes, I kind of talked about that briefly in the previous question. And if you are looking to improve fertility, maybe a couple things I didn't mention. I would, if you are healthy, you're not in stress mode, cold plunging can actually be very helpful. Red light therapy on the ovaries can be very helpful. Things like that can actually boost mitochondrial function and improve egg quality, improve fertility, along with adequate minerals and really good solid nutrition to make sure the body has everything it needs going into a pregnancy, because it really does tap out your body. It taps down your vitamin D, taps down all your nutrients. And so I really would work on increasing those stores. And then if you're working to improve fertility, things like cold plunging done with nuance, lots of nuance there. Again, in my leptin practitioner course, I have a whole week on cold therapy, and we kind of go into some different protocols for fertility for people with different health conditions, who should avoid it, who should go for it, because there's a lot of nuance there. But that's, again, in my leptin master plan practitioner course, if that's something you want to dive deeper into and learn more about. This is a great one. A big one, I realize, but what are the common root issues for gut issues? So many people say they have histamine intolerance, SIBO, or candida overgrowth. Is the fault a poor diet, or could it be in relation to circadian rhythms with a huge increase in tech usage in the last 25 years that has confused our body? So all of the above, all of the above. If you're eating foods like that are causing leaky gut, tearing the gut wall constantly over and over and over again, that's going to be a big issue. If you don't have adequate cellular water in the body, now that I know I keep talking about building exclusion zone water, but having adequate exclusion zone water is going to prevent things like SIBO, prevent like a lot of these gut issues and pathogens from even getting in the first place, and overgrowth. Circadian rhythms play a huge role because the gut lining is supposed to repair. I had a client just last week that she was horribly constipated. She was having to take laxatives before bed. I literally told her this very simple thing, and I'm like, I don't even want to take money from you doing a consult to tell you this, but can you go outside in the morning for sunrise and for UVA? Can you eat your breakfast outside and really get a strong signal in your eyes every single morning? Can you do that and block the blue light after sunset? And let me know if that helps with the constipation issue. I'm not even kidding. 3 days later, she emailed me and said, "What kind of insanity is this? I'm going to the bathroom every morning now with no laxatives for the first time in multiple years. Is it really that simple?" And yeah, for some people, it can actually be that simple. The gut microbiome also gets signals from light. We also get signals from grounding. Like, so most people are very disconnected from circadian rhythms. They're not blocking artificial light at night. And so their body is not able to make enough melatonin to heal and repair the gut lining, which is supposed to happen at night. They're eating too close to bed. They're snacking all day, so the gut doesn't have time to repair itself. They're on technology, which again, we know from the research of Dr. Gerald Pollack, this brings the exclusion zone water in the body down 15 to 20% from being around wireless technology. And a lot of people are wearing the AirPods, the iWatches, they've got their phone in their pocket. They're around a ton of Wi-Fi. And this again is bringing down that exclusion zone water, which absolutely impacts the gut and the ability of it to repair. So it's, I feel like it's so many things that's very multifaceted. And if people could just do these really basic, simple things, it could really move the needle quite a bit. And this includes, because a lot of people will say, I'm doing everything right. I'm doing sunrise. I'm doing sunset. I'm blocking artificial light at night. I'm like, what are you doing during the day? Well, I'm in my office. I'm like, how often are you going outside to put your feet on the earth? How often are you going outside to put sunlight on your skin or shine sunlight on your belly? Is that something that you can do in these 5 and 10 minute intervals throughout the day? And most people are not doing that. And so that can be huge. And I know not everyone can just get away like that to do that, but if you can, I think it could be really helpful. So that's something to consider if you're really struggling with a lot of gut issues. Do the simple, easy, free things first before going and getting all these tests for all these different problems and supplements and things like that. Try these things first. Any advice on fibroids? I am currently using the Holy Hydrogen Machine, but it would be great to get your thoughts on causes and remedies. There's some sort of inflammation happening in the body. The fibroids are an attempt by your body to heal something. I know that sounds completely insane, but inflammation is the body's attempt to get rid of a problem. And so, you know, I've had fibroids before, believe it or not. I had Hashimoto's in my mid-30s and had really high antibodies when I was pushing my body to the max. I also, at the same time, had fibroids that I had Hashimoto's. I actually went and got surgery to remove the fibroids because it was so painful and so severe that my OBGYN said, let's take these out. But she told me after the surgery, these are probably going to come back, just to FYI. And I was like, oh, great. I'm glad I did this stupid surgery. However, they never did come back. And I'm here 10 years later, they have never returned. And I had to switch my diet. I still don't eat a lot of grains. I don't eat a lot of nuts. I don't eat a lot of seeds. I just don't. I don't feel good when I have those foods. It's not great on my blood sugar. Just don't see a need for them. I don't really eat bread. I don't eat bread, honestly. I get lots of nutrition and things through my bioavailable protein, through local seasonal produce, fermented foods, things like that. And I'm getting tons of nutrition, but I had to cut out all those foods. And honestly, since cutting out all those foods, even 10 years ago, not even going like full carnivore, I haven't had fibroids to return. You know, when I go to my gynecologist and then I went through all of the things with trying to get pregnant and my fertility journey, we did multiple ultrasounds. Unfortunately, I know that's not good for your body. Now I know what I know. But no fibroids were ever an issue in me getting pregnant. That was never a problem, thank goodness. But if you have fibroids, I would first of all, change the diet, make sure you're getting out any sources of inflammation. Holy hydrogen will absolutely help. It is a selective antioxidant, so it will bring down inflammation. Castor oil packs, the Queen of Thrones is a brand that I use personally. Those can be very, very helpful. You don't want to overdo those. And if you have fibroids, you got to be careful the latter half of your cycle. Again, none of this is medical advice, but I found that doing the castor oil packs, even those 10 years ago, too close to the end of my cycle would cause it to come early, or cause a lot of bleeding to happen because it was breaking up the fibroids. So just some things to consider. I eat carnivore, and since finding your content, I try to stick to my circadian rhythm, and it's changed everything. So thank you for all you're doing. I work out late afternoon, but the other night I had a crazy busy day and didn't do my workout till much later. Would it be better to just skip eating and then have a good breakfast or eat before bed in a situation like that? Honestly, I think anytime that you're eating after sunset, you are putting your body at risk to not make enough melatonin. Your body needs cortisol to be down. It needs at least 4 hours of darkness for melatonin production. It needs to be able to drop your body temperature down as well for ultimate repair. So eating too close to bed is going to keep your body temperature elevated. It could keep it elevated. So again, you don't reach those deeper states of sleep and repair. So honestly, if you have to work out, I really don't like it late, close to bed. Definitely, I don't really like after sunset workouts, period. But I would definitely not eat, you know, as long as your AMPK pathway is operating properly, you don't have leptin resistance, then I think it's fine to skip dinner, right? I think that overall, I know I'm going to get like reamed for this. I think people eat too much. They snack too much. They eat too many meals. They eat too much, period. And we're so conditioned to like rely completely on food for our energy. We don't understand how melanin works. Melanin is an energy source for the body. Carrie and I did a great episode on that on Quantum Conversations. So go check that out if you want to learn more about this. We don't get enough energy from earthing. We don't get enough energy from sunlight, from infrared, from allowing that infrared to hit our skin and expand that easy water in the body. Remember, the easy water is like a battery. Your body is electric. It relies on this for energy. And so I think people, we are so conditioned to need the snacks, to need the meals, to need all these things that we get emotionally involved and worried if we skip dinner every now and then. It's okay. I just don't want you skipping breakfast because most people have really misaligned circadian rhythms, and food is a secondary circadian signaler, and it is also helpful to balance the blood sugar in the morning. And most people have pretty stressful lives, especially in that morning time when the cortisol is supposed to be high anyway. So that's my rationale and logic there, in case you're wondering. I know that wasn't even a question on the list. What is the root cause of acne in your opinion? I mean, there's definitely a tie to the gut. There is something, the skin is our body's, you know, organ of detoxification. So the body is trying to get rid of something. There is some, as I mentioned earlier, inflammation is the body's attempt to heal, get rid of something. So your body's trying to detoxify something through your skin. So I know it's not probably the answer that's simple and easy, but that is my thought on the root cause of acne. Is there something that is causing the body to want to get rid of something? I would love to hear your thoughts on the cell danger response and how it pertains to leptin resistance. So the thing is that if you are in this cell danger response, mitochondria are going to operate a lot less efficiently. The body, the energy management system of the body is essentially going to be messed up, right? Branches of the nervous system that are needed to heal and repair are not going to work appropriately. So this is why I'm such a big proponent of people like Irene Lyon in helping people to get out of this through trauma and nervous system work, nervous system healing. Now, this can go beautifully with the circadian and quantum work because there is what Irene teaches a lot of is orienting to your environment, to where you are. And when you're doing the circadian lifestyle and the quantum lifestyle, you are on your technology less and you are outdoors more and you are connected to the earth more and you are aware of the surroundings. And so just doing that alone can be really helpful at getting your body out of the cell danger response. But that is, yeah, it absolutely can impact leptin resistance, can cause people to hang on to the extra weight, the extra inflammation, because the body's just trying to keep you safe because it thinks that it's an emergency, is trying to preserve the energy as best as it can. So, you know, doing all the things I talk about, but some people are really going to be best served at also looking at the nervous system in this work as well. Would roasting nuts reduce the lectin content and make them less inflammatory? Actually, sometimes it can increase some of the PUFAs and make them oxidized. So not always, but sometimes it just depends on the technique that you're using. I like this question a lot because I get it a lot. Wondering if we should be eating according to the circadian rhythm of our physical location or focus nutrition more around our mitochondrial haplotype. So if you don't know what mitochondrial haplotype, it is your mother's mitochondria, where that originates from. If you look at the equator and draw a line in the middle of it, there's northern haplotype and there's southern haplotype. And so I will find that, and it's always based on where you are. It is always based on where you are currently living. But I want to say this, a lot of my southern haplotype people, and you can find out your southern haplotype through research, asking questions. If you don't want to give your saliva over to one of these DNA companies, I did a DNA123me.com like, I don't know, like 20 years ago, something crazy like that, before I even thought that someone would have my genetic data. You know, live and learn. However, I was able to find out my haplotype through going back through those results I got 20 years ago, and they gave me that I'm an H2 haplotype. So I'm a very northern haplotype. So if you are a southern haplotype and you're living in a northern latitude, it is more difficult for, and there's scientific research to back this up. I did a whole module on this in my Leptin Master Plan practitioner course, where I talked about these, give the map of the haplotypes. You can find this on Wikipedia also. And talk about how these southern haplotypes, they do have a more difficult time adapting to cold. They do have a more difficult time adapting to keto. It takes them longer. It doesn't mean they cannot do it, but it's just the way that the mitochondria operate. Because in the northern environments, our biggest, we had to be afraid of dying from freezing to death, right? So that is how those mitochondria adapted, was to cold, because that kept us alive. If you are a southern haplotype, your mitochondria adapted to being chased by lions and predators. And so the way that you respond to cold and adapt to cold is not going to be as efficient as somebody who's an H2. You should still use these modalities and they're still going to be helpful for you, but they are going to take you longer to adapt. So I have worked with people who are a southern haplotype living in a northern environment, and they want to do keto and they just really struggle to do it. And so we add in more fermented foods. We do the best to stay seasonal and local and meet that person where they are so they can still meet their goals. So always eat based on where you are, but know that if you're struggling to do keto and you are this southern haplotype, that's probably part of the reason why, right? And it's always helpful to have a practitioner, a second set of eyes on you to help you in these types of situations, right? There might be extra minerals you need to add. Potassium is typically one that most people are low on to start off with, as I think I mentioned earlier in this episode. But yeah, having that second set of eyes can be really helpful. Do you recommend a multivitamin when eating seasonally and locally, living in Minnesota? If not, how do you get all the needed vitamins during winter months, i.e. vitamin C? So this is highly individual. I think that you need to do what feels right for you, what resonates most for you, and how you feel your best. I am not somebody who is 100% against all forms of supplementation. Minerals are usually where I have people start with, because that's actually going to help your body be more efficient and run the energy systems of the body. But there are micronutrients that people do need to make sure they have and be aware of. So, you know, this is, again, one of those things that's like on a case-by-case basis, and to actually look and see what foods are available. I don't have a Minnesota chart, but I recommend for people that are in those areas to eat the cellar stable foods, look at canned and fermented foods if you're leptin sensitive. So that is where you could probably get more of those nutrients, would be in the cellar stable produce, canned and ferments in those different months. And if in doubt, you know, it's not the worst thing in the world to supplement. I'd rather you do that than go out and eat a bunch of junk food, right? So it's always like gold standard, good and okay. So always remember that. It's not about being perfect. There's no finish line. And listen to what your body tells you as well. Once you begin to be more in tune with all of these things, you're going to be able to trust the inner knowing and that intuition that you have that says, I feel low on this, I need this. And Carrie and I have talked about this. We actually just did an episode on this very topic. If you go to the Quantum Conversations podcast, we have a whole podcast on local and seasonal eating where we talk about this. You know, Carrie says that sometimes in the middle of winter, she'll be, you know, at a grocery store and see something like a mango. And she's like, oh my gosh, I have to have that, right? And it's not going to ruin everything to have one mango. There might be a nutrient or something that her body is particularly low on that she needs at that particular time. So we get so cut off and bought into dogma that we don't listen to those things. Now, if it's like you're walking through a grocery store and you see a Snickers bar and, oh my God, I have to have that, that's a little different than a mango or an orange, right? And you don't want to be eating those foods every single day during the winter. Absolutely not. Or even regularly, really. But if you are having those like thoughts about a certain food, there's typically a need for it. Just a little side note as I'm going through these. When I was pregnant, and I'm pretty sure I've shared this before on the podcast, so I apologize for like the overshare, but I had not eaten any kind of potatoes or like really starchy vegetables in, I hadn't really eaten a lot of those in years because I had been carnivore, low carb keto, done some carb cycling, right? So I did some potatoes, some fries, like a little homemade French fries. I would do those on my carb cycle days once a week. But when I was pregnant, I got pregnant, all I could think about was baked potatoes. And it wasn't like a small little serving of fries. Like I had eaten my homemade fries made in beef tallow and the air fryer. Wasn't that. It was like, I need a giant baked potato. And I want this like all the time. And so I just kind of gave into that. And really, I think that I went into the pregnancy with low potassium. And my body was craving potatoes. It was craving tomatoes. Of course, I ate tons of avocado, seafood, all those other foods that are high in potassium. And there are other minerals in those foods as well that I think my body was just really craving. And I just ate it and I had no guilt about it. And I have no guilt about it to this day. So I know that was like probably a longer answer than you wanted for your question, but I hope it helps. Sarah, I am a chronic constipation sufferer, especially now that I am in menopause. You've mentioned brain inflammation and how it can correlate to inflammation in other parts of the body. Do you think that brain inflammation can have an effect on your peristaltic muscle? Mind feels paralyzed. Absolutely. Absolutely can. That is where, again, I would look at doing all these protocols to work on the signaling in your brain and in your body. I think the brain is the master control center of the body and is sending out signals all day long about the time of day, the time of year, what microbiome should be doing, what thyroid should be doing, what hormone should be doing. It all starts in the brain. And so we have to support that through these things like circadian rhythms, through grounding. I think eating wild seafood, I've talked about it in other mini episodes before, is very huge at bringing down inflammation. There have been studies to show this. And it was even using supplements, which I'm not a huge fan of. But it was shown that that could bring down brain inflammation and leptin resistance. And, you know, I'm not afraid to have people look at their stomach acid. Do you have low stomach acid? All the episodes on my podcast and my YouTube channel with Steve Wright, we really dive into this. But a lot of people have low stomach acid, not elevated stomach acid, and they're being given antacids and all these things, and it's harmful. So I would look at slowly doing an HCL challenge, making sure you don't have any other gut issues, ulcers, anything like that. You got to be really careful. But, and again, this is not medical advice. Maybe check to see what your stomach acid levels are like. That's a good place to start with the constipation. And then if that doesn't fix, look into some digestive enzymes. I think my code over at Healthy Gut is Sarah15. I'm not sure. Don't quote me on that. But if you wanted some good products to start with, I would look at those. And I would start there first if you're not already doing these things with circadian rhythms. Because I, as I mentioned with that client earlier, she was literally eating prunes and laxatives and all these things to go to the bathroom. And she tweaked very, very simple things that most people can do and is now going to the bathroom at 8 o'clock in the morning every day. So I would look at that. Is drinking cold water prior to sunup bad for circadian rhythm? I don't think so. It's not a big problem. That's not the top of my list. Looking at your phone, turning on all the lights in your house and turning on the TV. Yeah. Cold water. If anything, cold temperature in the morning actually helps to bring the body temperature up. So it's not, I don't think it's a big problem. With blue blockers and phone on red color, is it still bad to look at it before sun's up, down? Because of the neurotransmitters, right? And so we may not be necessarily giving our brain the signal that it's noon in the middle of June, which is what our phone always tells us, but we might be activating parts of the brain that are not ready to come online yet. And just without getting super scientific about different brain waves that you need to be in at specific times of day that are supposed to go online at specific times of day. We also have dopamine and serotonin, all these things that are supposed to be activated in morning sunlight via POMC. And so looking at the phone is going to disrupt that whole process and could set you up for a crappy day. So unless you're like looking at your phone to, you know, I have to see if I have any emails changing my schedule for the day or changing my kids' schedule for the day, or I want to glance at the weather, you know, I would try to avoid it. What drinks are okay before the sun is up? I mean, is warm salt water okay? Sure. Yeah, that's fine. It's great. That would be a great thing to have some nice mineral water, some warm mineral water. Totally fine. Do you think toxic lotions, candles, shampoos, laundry soaps contribute to leptin resistance? Absolutely. Absolutely do. In my leptin reset program, I have a whole day talking about that and that entire pathway. But yeah, I definitely recommend people get rid of those. They're endocrine disruptors. I'm not a fan. With clear blue blockers on, will the brightness of light still impact circadian rhythm? So clear blue blockers are not, they don't work. There were a ton of headlines out recently that everyone was clickbaiting. Blue blockers don't work. Blue blockers don't work. Well, it was on the clear blue blocker. So unless your blue blockers are yellow, orange, or red, they are not going to appropriately block blue light and green light. Those are the ones that are going to be most disruptive to circadian rhythm. And also the brightness effect. This is something that doesn't get talked about enough because I did this experiment recently. I shared with my newsletter community about it, that I watched TV every night and with my friend, Dr. Sarah Pugh, she's here staying with me. We really wanted to watch the show Dope Sick together and ended up staying up till like 10:30 with blue blockers on, with, you know, blankets over the skin because we have photoreceptors on the skin. And my sleep was crappy after the second or third night. The next day I felt terrible. My appetite was off. I had sugar cravings. I was like, what in the heck? You know, and it's the brightness. So brightness can disrupt melatonin production. So you have to take that into account. When we talk about all the circadian stuff, you could be wearing the red glasses, wearing the phone, shining it in your face. You need 4 hours of darkness for your body to start making melatonin. So you can disrupt the circadian rhythm just through overexposure to brightness, period, even if it is a very bright red light. So that's something that's really important. Do the EMF blocker stickers really work? No, do not. Do not buy. How long after the sun comes up should someone eat? I mean, right around the time of sunrise, really within 30 minutes, I think. If you can, do your best, right? Don't let perfect be the enemy of good. How does EMF affect your hormones, leptin and circadian rhythm, etc.? It is largely to do with easy water, exclusion zone water, and taking that exclusion zone water down by 15 to 20%. When you have low exclusion zone water, electrons cannot tunnel through the electron transport chain efficiently. This is going to cause inflammation, including brain inflammation. It is like kryptonite for your mitochondria, which is the energy management system of the body. So always when we're talking about these things, think about that. Also floods the cell with calcium. That's a work of Dr. Martin Paul. And that's not good. So we don't want to do that. And is it important to have food before coffee after the sun is up? Can I have coffee then food after the sun's up? I mean, it just depends on your hormones, right? I have friends of mine that live in the jungle and they, God bless them, love you guys. But they're putting all these reels on their Instagram lately saying all these people that say you can't have coffee before food are full of crap. I'm like, well, that's great and all when you live in the jungle and you can go outside barefoot for sunrise and you don't have all the stresses of the modern world interfering, right? Like I said in the very beginning of this episode, context, where do you live? What's your environment like? What's your diet like? Are you outside connected to the earth under the sun? Most people, the answer is no. So most people, I'm going to say eat the food first because you need to balance your blood sugar so your adrenals do not have to come in and save the day and mop up the mess. So that's my answer to that one. I'm trying to get my mom to eat healthier. I get a lot of questions like this. My husband, my mom, my cousin, my brother, you can only do you. You, I know it's so cliche. You have to be the change. You are the catalyst. And if they really respect you and they love you and they see amazing, great things happening in you, that might not, but it might spark them to want to shift and change. But you cannot force anybody to do anything. And it's tough. I have close family members who I love dearly and they are not in good health. And it breaks my heart because I wish that I could help them. I wish I could shift things for them, but they're not going to do it until they're ready to do it. and me getting in their face and telling them what to do is not going to be helpful. And so, you know, again, not a fun answer, but something that needs to be taken into consideration when it's dealing with a friend, family member, whoever. You do the work, you be the change. And then if they see it and it's attractive to them, it's always in recovery, we always say attraction, not promotion. That's how this all works with health, with anything. It's attraction, not promotion. Been on carnivore for almost 2 years and still struggling with constipation, no matter how much fat I eat, water I drink, or magnesium I take. Any ideas what might help at this point? Is carnivore just wrong for me? So I think that it's important to do a little bit of cycling for your hormones, for your thyroid. It could be, again, this is like something where I would need to do a full consultation with someone, ask a ton of questions. Where do you live? What haplotype are you? I mean, it's just like a loaded question. Most people, unless there is a medical condition like severe mental disorders, epilepsy, doing a long-term carnivore diet. Again, I have friends that have been doing it. So there's always outliers and there's always people that in my clinical experience, I don't see a lot of benefits for doing carnivore long-term because you are downregulating certain digestive enzymes like amylase. Your body's not going to, it's a use it or lose it thing, right? And so it is possible that certain digestive enzymes, certain enzymatic functions are not happening in your gut, could be low stomach acid, could be poor circadian rhythms, right? Could there's just so many factors involved here. And I don't tell people what to do nutritionally as a whole anymore. I know I used to do that on my channel and podcast, but I really don't because it's case by case basis. But you know, if you're trying to do carnivore every which way, are you doing the circadian stuff? Are you doing the light stuff? Are you getting proper sunlight signaling, right? I had very slow digestion on carnivore and I was told by a lot of the carnivore gurus and experts, oh, if you poop only once every 5 days, then that's okay. Disagree, hard disagree. Poop, pee, and sweat is the body's detoxification pathway. And you want to be doing all three of them. You want to be doing all three of them. If you're not, you are at risk for all kinds of health issues. And we need to move and flow things through the body. Work on the circadian stuff, work on building exclusion zone water in the body, and possibly consider looking at low stomach acid, looking at enzymatic function, maybe doing a little bit of carb cycling, maybe adding in some fermented foods, maybe diversifying the gut a little bit. Just my two cents, not medical advice. Do what you feel is best for you. Could you share the best recovery diet for menopausal women with stage 3 adrenal fatigue and pre-diabetic? Also include how much to eat and how many meals. I would again start with your light environment because what is going to talk this most strongly to the HPA axis, which directly impacts your adrenals, is going to be that activation of the leptin melanocortin pathway in the morning in UVA sunlight. Blocking blue light at night, again, it is crucial that you are getting adequate rest and repair. Food, it's crucial you're getting adequate protein, you're getting adequate minerals. This would be a situation where I would want to ask more questions. If you're pre-diabetic, then we need to pull you back on the higher glycemic foods. If you're eating rice, pasta, you know, beans, grains, any of that that could be contributing to inflammation, I pull those out. You know, I love to get people to 3 meals a day. For most people, I think that's going to be great. And then when you feel the need to fast a little bit, you eat breakfast, maybe you eat lunch, you skip dinner, or maybe you eat breakfast and do a 24-hour fast breakfast to breakfast. But if you're an adrenal fatigue person with these issues, and we're not going to pull fasting. We're not going to worry about that, but I would do the 3 meals. So there are a few more questions here that I did not get to. I will see if I can save these and do them on the next episode, but we're at just about an hour here. And I think I've covered a lot of topics, a lot of ground. Again, none of it is medical advice. And I'm just really doing the best that I can with the information that I have. There's always nuance. There's always more that needs to be looked at and discussed when it comes to your individual health. But if you're still here, if you've gone this far and you're still listening, thank you for being here. And if you're on YouTube, leave me a comment or a like. If you are over on Spotify or Apple, leave the show up to a 5-star review and check out my free resources at my website, www.sarahkleinerwellness.com. Use the code podcast to save 10% on courses if you want to dive deeper and if you want to ask me more questions and get a faster response than this type of interaction, then join my private community. There's also a link for that on my website, sarahkleinerwellness.com. Thank you again for being here, and I look forward to doing this again soon.